Hey, you.
Yeah, you.
If you or someone you know is struggling with anything mentioned on today's program, please, 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 please email me at authentic1@gmail.com. That's AUTHENICK, the number 1@gmail.com. I am available 24/7, 365 to help in any way that I can. I have resources, I have open ears, an open heart, and tons of hope. I've been freely given all these things and would love to give them to you. Be good to yourselves and each other.
Can't get these memories out of my mind, and some kind of madness has started to evolve.
Welcome, 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 one and all to Authentic! My name is Nicholas Thomas Fitzsimmons Vandenhavel, and this is my show, Authentic. Get it? Where we get authentic. Yeah. And with me, as always, is my dog, Marla.
Marla! Come here, baby. Say hello to all of our listeners.
I see a red door and I want to paint it black, even though I'm colorblind.
All right, that's enough, Marla. Go back to rolling your stones. Anyways, on Authentic, where we get authentic, we talk about all things recovery. What do I mean by that, all things recovery? What I mean by that is if you are still living and breathing on this earth, you, yes, you, are in recovery from something. I am in recovery from an eating disorder. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a drug addict. I'm a compulsive gambler. I have bipolar disorder. Really? The list could go on and on and on, but this show is not about me today. It is about two people. First is my guest, Chad. Second is the one person whose life we might save today. And if we help one person today, then we have done our jobs. Without further ado, Chad, welcome to the show. Please introduce yourself in any way you see fit, sir.
Hi, Nick. Thanks for introducing me to the show. I'm happy to be here. My name is Chad Simons. I am a father. I am a son, I am a husband, and I'm a cricket farmer, among many other things. Most of all, importantly, right here is that I'm in recovery.
What is it that you are in recovery from? Why are you here with me in the studio today?
To put it in one word is anxiety, but it's expressed itself in co-occurring disorders, bipolar disorder, and chemical dependency.
What did that anxiety look like? When did that start happening? Were you a little kid? I remember for me when my anxiety started, I was a very small child. When did your anxiety start? When did you notice?
I was a shy child. I remember walking down the hallway to my kindergarten teacher, not really wanting to look at her straight in the face. But the first time I really had the feeling of anxiety that I remember it being a problem was after I graduated from high school and I was looking for a job that summer and I didn't have one in mind. And I just remember that first time I felt that feeling that later progressed into something worse, different, that I have been struggling with ever since.
Did that come internally? That pressure that caused that anxiety? Or did that come from external sources as well?
It was internal, of course. I say of course because it was my feeling, but I think it was an external pressure because up to that point, I hadn't really thought about needing a job or what I was going to do. I just figured I'll go to college and figure it out or something like that. I mean, the pressures probably came from external sources, from my peers, my parents. Up to that point, I had been living a life of performance and achievement, paying as much attention to detail as I possibly could, getting the best grades I could. And then all of a sudden it was time to ante up and do something out there that could actually make a living. And I had no clue what I was going to do that summer. And there was the anxiety.
You came to the end of an educational career that was very successful. And you were a bright, shining star that was going to go out into the world and be the president or do wonderful things.
Yeah.
There was a lot of expectations there. Is that right?
For myself and, yeah, externally too, I think, yeah.
It sounds like you you most certainly worked up to potential.
I felt like that, yeah, honestly. I guess an A minus wasn't quite enough because there was always room for improvement, unless it was a straight out A.
Was that a message from your parents?
Yes, it was. I mean, they congratulated me. They always supported me, but I feel like if there was room for improvement, they always noted that. I think they wanted me to express my full potential, and I appreciate that. But I think at the same time, I was looking for acceptance of what I had done at that point.
Do you think that external pressure that may not have been very strong or blatant, do you think that expectation or that pressure to have straight A's, do you think that started your anxiety? Or do you think that, you know, I just got it when I was 18, when I just graduate school and I have no idea what the hell I'm going to do with my life? Don't you think that maybe, just maybe, that might have something to do with it?
Well, sure. Now that I look at it, it probably did. I guess I was just thinking of that nervous feeling of anxiety that I often feel in the pit of my stomach, where it's just obvious.
What is that feeling like in the pit of your stomach? Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. The best way for me to elaborate on that is to express a situation that many of us have probably felt, and that's where you're ready to take a big exam that you know you're not prepared for. You have to walk in there and take it anyway, and that panic you feel before, only there's no relief after you finish the exam. It's just there.
At that point, did you think that anybody else was experiencing that same feeling?
I don't know. I guess I never really thought of it back then. I'm sure other people had. I mean, in high school, I did witness other students experiencing anxiety, but I was probably more in my head at that point and not really either mature enough or aware enough to think that, wow, you know, there's other people going through this too, and it's okay.
You get through high school successfully. Very successfully is what it sounds like. And then this anxiety hits that, oh my gosh, what am I going to do with my life? And that hits a lot of people when they graduate from high school. I found that some people know exactly what the fuck they're going to do. They have this plan. I'm going to go to school, and then I'm going to graduate, and then I'm going to go for my master's, and then I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and they have it all laid out. And you had nothing laid out.
No, I didn't.
Why is that?
I guess I just wanted to make money at that point. I figured I would be an entrepreneur of some sort, that I would just start a business, that I would just, hey, you know, I did that well to that point, so I'll figure it out later. You know,
this anxiety that exists with entrepreneurs, that pressure to bring something new to the world that nobody has ever seen and do it better than anybody else. When were you going to do that?
That's a good question. I guess in my mind, going into college, I was going to learn what I could. I mean, I actually even looked into schools that taught entrepreneurship. I didn't find too many at that time, and I really doubted what they could teach. I thought, you know, you just have to get out there and do it. But I figured, you know, I'll learn some lessons in accounting and economics, and I'll join this program called the Management Fellow Program and hopefully pick up some lessons along the way and learn what I need to now and just get the degree. Once that's over, I'll get out there and do something. What it was going to be, I had no idea.
Just get that piece of paper.
Right.
And then something was going to happen.
Exactly.
How did your anxiety show up in college?
To be honest with you, it looked like me going up into the attic of the fraternity house I belonged to and hiding out in there and smoking weed and listening to the HVAC system develop some kind of rhythm. I just get up there and I don't know, it's kind of funny. I'd just go hide.
Sounds like you were really high.
Yeah, I was.
What is the HVAC sounding like today?
Yeah, that's true.
Drugs.
Yeah.
Oh, drugs. I digress.
Yeah. I'd say I miss him, but I don't really.
Speaking of digressing, Chad and I have figured out what our safe word is going to be today on the show in case we get a little off track, go off on tangents, because that's what we tend to do.
Sure.
That's what Chad and I tend to do. We go off on tangents. However, the word that we are going to use today, chosen by Chad, is iceberg. So, iceberg, Chad.
Iceberg it is.
When you were in college, looking back, when you were smoking weed up in the attic, that's how you dealt with your anxiety. Were there any other ways that you know for sure, like, that's how I dealt with my anxiety when I was in college?
Well, sure. Even earlier than joining the fraternity and going up in the attic, I would study hard during the week, and then I would party hard on the weekend, which at that point, my freshman year, was simply just alcohol. Not to diminish the word alcohol by using the word just, but it was alcohol alone. that I was consuming at that time. There was alcohol, then there were other drugs, but any other ways I dealt with anxiety, I can't remember. Anxiety to me at that age, as a freshman in college, was still kind of a new thing to me. I figured just keep studying, you know, just drink on the weekends, which turned into Thursday night too, and then became pretty much every night.
There was a pattern developing.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just smoking the weed. You're in college now, and you have this anxiety going on, and you're turning to substances.
Correct.
That is what so many people do. Why did you do it? What was alcohol and drugs giving you that you weren't getting elsewhere to relieve that anxiety? That's why you were doing it, right?
Exactly. It was a release.
Right.
You know.
So explain, what does that release feel like, look like, sound like?
Yeah, I guess it's like, let's say you're cold and you jump in a warm shower and all of a sudden you just feel relief from that miserable cold. And then, you just are comforted. I think that's about it.
The search for comfort in people that are affected by anxiety and depression is so prevalent. These false sources, if you want to call them that, in drugs and alcohol and other means, for example, using an eating disorder or cutting. There's a multitude of ways that people deal with their anxiety and depression. But you chose alcohol and drugs.
Right.
Were you using any other quote-unquote symptoms for your anxiety? Were there any co-occurring things going on besides that?
Sure, yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, it got pretty bad because I was, not only did I start off with alcohol, and then start smoking weed. I also started eating mushrooms, magic mushrooms, and then LSD. Eventually, it caught up with me. I was driving down the road, probably too fast, got pulled over, and, living free and careless at that time, didn't even think about what was in the back of my car driving around, but there were some empty beer bottles, and one thing led to another, and they found mushrooms and paraphernalia for marijuana as well. So
one thing led to another. Sounds a little ambiguous. What did that conversation with the police officer look like? That one thing led to another.
Yeah, do you mind if, actually it wasn't even that polite. He just said, step out of the car. I did. He checked my eyes, took me in. It's,
the old dog and pony show.
Yeah. I mean, I was too young to even realize I could have just asked for a warrant or something. But for so long, I guess, wished I had, asked for a warrant and gotten out of that situation somehow. But
why? What would that have done for you?
Exactly. What it would have done is just prolonged the progression toward worse things, honestly.
Right. That's hindsight looking back.
Right.
But in the moment, what would that have done for you? If you got out of it in that moment, what would you be doing right after that?
I would have gone back and smoked some weed, man, because I was probably so anxious about just being pulled over and
dodged a bullet on that one.
Totally. I mean, that had happened several times where I dodged a bullet. And that was my third arrest, actually, in 2 or 3 months. That was a period in my life when I think things were going off the tracks pretty much.
What do you mean going off the tracks?
I think that's when I was starting to become manic for the first time.
What is manic for those out there that are familiar with the term but don't really know exactly what that experience is? Can you explain what your experience was being manic?
Yeah, at that time it was out of control, going from one excitement to another, one party to another. I mean, let me back up to the end of my freshman year. I had experienced a depression, actually, before I went manic. And that was because my grades had fallen due to substance use. I was depressed that I was getting kicked out of the management fellow program. And it was probably one of the most horrible times of my life. So as soon as that semester ended, I went home back to my parents' house and I hooked up with the friends I had had before. I was damned and determined to just have as much fun as possible, get high as possible, as often as possible. Yeah, I went kayaking, or I tried to, and then went whitewater rafting. And on the way home from whitewater rafting, I got picked up by the cops. They found weed on the person I was with. I was underage. They found beer cans on me. I actually threw them on the ground and got charged with criminal littering. And I think I'm an environmentalist, right? So that's a paradox. But anyway, yeah,
iceberg.
I mean, okay.
First arrest, canoe. Second arrest, what do you got?
Second arrest was shoplifting. I
Why were you shoplifting, Chad?
For the thrill, honestly. I had the money to buy what I needed to buy. I was getting a carton of cigarettes. I threw them over a fence at Walmart and then pulled my car around there to pick them up. They tackled me and brought me in, and that was my second arrest.
What do you mean by thrill? What were you getting out of it?
I just wanted to see if I could get away with it. There have been several things I had done to that point just to get away with, and I had gotten away with them. It was just a thrill, to be honest. I wanted to see if I could do it, then have that reward after, you know, that drive home, like, laughing that I got away with it. But
right, it's chasing that high.
Yeah.
And then the warm shower, the hot shower that you alluded to earlier, that imagery that you had, it sounds very similar. Sounds like a parallel experience with the shoplifting.
Yeah, it is. It's just in a different way. I mean, instead of it being like a warm shower that's all soothing, it's, wow, that was so fun. And then laughing about it, as long as it wasn't too harmful, you know?
Was there any remorse there?
Oh, sure. I wasn't too remorseful from stealing a carton of cigarettes from Walmart, this monstrous corporation that really wouldn't have experienced anything from that.
So you're justified in that, is what you're saying?
Pretty much.
That's
yeah.
the story but, yeah, that you're
remorse
telling yourself.
On a personal, moral, ethical level after some time, yeah, definitely. I'm embarrassed to even say it now, but that's what happened.
Iceberg. Manic episodes. We were getting into what that felt like for you. Just this extreme high. What were you doing on these extreme highs?
I think it was more like not what I was doing, but what my mind was doing to me. Picking up on synchronicitous events, coincidences, and bringing significance from them, meaning to me personally.
What do you mean by that? Synchronicities?
Well, let me start with one that's very concrete. I was reading a book, and in the next room, a couple guys, they were having a conversation, and what they said were the exact same words that came out of what I was reading at that moment. And I didn't make that up. A lot of things like that were happening where I didn't make anything up. What was happening around me was coinciding with either what I was doing or what I was thinking. Now, it's that point right there where you're going to say, well, how can something coincide with what you're thinking without you having some influence on that? Because it's your thoughts and they can be something that you're looking for or whatever. You know, like some people say, I see this number over and over again, and it could be that you're looking for it. There are very many concrete examples of where there was nothing like that at all involved. However, there were many examples where that was involved. And I think where I got into trouble with the manic episodes is when I could no longer distinguish what was real, what wasn't. It would just get amped up to the point of losing control over my mind, basically, being extremely paranoid and making up fantasies to try to explain this phenomenon and losing myself and acting out those fantasies.
Could you give me an example of one of these synchronicities, one of these fantasies, one of these obsessive episodes that wasn't real?
They're harder to remember, but I'll give you an example of where I'm just walking down the sidewalk, you know, and I'm thinking about anything, whatever. Let's just say it's like marijuana, since I've just been talking about that, because that's what I'm thinking about now. And then a couple comes walking by me, and they happen to be talking about the same thing. Or they even say something that relates or could relate to that. Oh, did you see that smoke behind the mountain curl? I'm thinking, smoke. Oh, yeah, they're talking about smoke, and I was just thinking about weed. I mean, that's a very simple example. It's the type of thing that would probably portray a false or fake synchronicitous event or coincidence.
And then these coincidences, these synchronous events, what would that lead to?
Feedback. My thoughts would lead into the next event, which then would lead me to the next thought, next event. And it goes back and forth, and it can go down a rabbit hole, if you will, until I somehow snap out of it. The problem was there were probably four times when I did not snap out of it, like the CIA recruiting me or something like that. Aliens trying to communicate with me. A network of psychics trying to get me to join them. I could think of more. These fantasies that I would use in my mind to try to explain things that were making that didn't seem possible to me to make them possible. And then sure enough, things would play in, right into those fantasies to the point where I'm convinced that's what was going on.
All this craziness is going on inside your head. What is going on around you? What is physically happening while your mind is attaching to these unreal fantasies, literally?
You know, everybody else is going about their lives ordinarily and normally, as far as I know. To put an example on it again, I was, for example, walking into college one day, and I could have sworn that some sort of a CIA agent was following me to just gather information or whatever. I didn't believe at that point they were actually going to approach me to recruit me or anything like that. I was walking up to, I was walking past an art exhibit, and the glass was showing his reflection, and I could have sworn he was after me and looking at me. Here's a better example, honestly. I was on a flight from Washington, D.C. to Denver, Colorado, and this is all going on in my mind. This is going to take a little while, but the woman on my left and the guy on my right were both touching their noses at the same time. And I'm like, okay, something's up. I think that even the muscle that was, or the skin that was touching the leg of the woman sitting next to me was moving because of some reason, right? Well, guess what comes on the movie for the flight? It was Al Pacino's movie about some CIA recruitment thing, you know? And then, of course, there's two guys standing in the aisle talking, and I think they're talking about me, that kind of thing. It actually calmed myself down enough to fall asleep. I was very impressed with myself about that. But I made it back to Colorado, you know? Got off the flight, and I'm walking around. It seemed like everybody was looking at me like, wow, did that really happen? And then not me thinking, did that really happen, but like people looking at me like wanting to know if I was okay. Is he really having these thoughts? Is he going to be acceptable for our program? Whatever. But the funny thing is, you know, I was planning on taking a bus back to Boulder that evening after I got my bags from the baggage claim. And so I go up to where the bus stop is, and it's the same. The only woman out there was the woman who was sitting on my left during the flight. And I could go on and on and on about all these coincidences and how they played into my fantasies. You know, often I thought that I'd write a book about it.
I think you should.
Oh, man. I don't know. Maybe I will. But
what would you call your book?
I actually thought I'd call it Episode 1, Episode 2, and Episode 3. Now there's an Episode 4 because I just had my fourth manic episode back in December. But I wanted to call it Sound Episode because I believed I was not making it up and that this was not crazy, that I was actually experiencing a phenomenon that somehow we're all connected. And I truly believe that.
Are you telling these fantasies to other people this whole time? Or is this just going on inside your head and you are just going?
This is all going inside my head. I'm going.
How was anybody affected around you by this? Did anybody know this was going on, Chad?
No, I kept it secret. I knew, hey, if this is a CIA recruitment technique and they're putting me through some kind of psychological exercise to see if I'm fit for the field or whatever, I knew to keep my mouth shut. And if it wasn't the fantasy itself that was telling me to be quiet about it, it was the fact that I knew I'd be batshit crazy if I said it to anybody and I'd be in a hospital.
That had to have been so terrifying, so scary, lonely.
Extremely.
Chad, I'm sorry you went through that. To go through something like that alone, I can't imagine because I've never been through it. And the wonderful thing about finding recovery is finding people that have similar stories to you, share in a common peril. And I truly hope that you've found someone that has gone through the same thing as you.
I feel like I have. I'm in recovery now with an intensive outpatient program, and it's been very nice to hear through the 12-step program meetings I've been to as well that other people do experience these kinds of crazy thoughts.
How does that feel to relate to other people that have had the same experience as you?
I've been looking for it for over 20 years. I desperately needed a community where I could share these thoughts and the feelings that go along with them.
Did you get the same relief from sharing your story, from finding connection in these people, in certain rooms, in this outpatient that share your story? Did you get the same relief out of that you did from substances?
It's better. Not as drastic or as immediate or as potent, but it's longer lasting and calming. It's real.
You said earlier that you had one catalyst, which is why you're sitting across the soundboard from me right now. What happened in your last manic episode that got you sitting here?
The event that got me here was my sister-in-law's kicking my ass, really. But it was her kicking my ass that made me make my own choice to get help.
What was leading up to that kick in the ass?
Oh, fights. Again, just being obnoxious, a lot of drug use, marijuana and alcohol primarily, magic mushrooms over the last summer, lots of pressures. They kind of came to a boiling point, and it was Thanksgiving, actually. I was not even at Thanksgiving dinner with my wife's family. I was in a hotel smoking weed and drinking alcohol. My sister-in-law, she kicked me in the ass. you know, made me wake up. It took somebody else besides my normal familiar comfort of my family at home, the comfort zone that I was in there, that she was far enough removed, kicked me in the ass, that kind of woke me up.
You keep saying kicked me in the ass.
My wife took the keys away from me and she went into the house. So I went up to the house to ask her mom to help me get the keys back so I could drive off.
And this was during a manic episode.
It was probably, yeah, the beginning of it, if not during, yeah. My wife's sister came to the door, said we're sick of helping you, kind of yelling at me a bit. And I wondered what she was doing there because it was between me and my wife that I needed my keys back. I didn't know why she had come to the door. But I was glad now that she did, no matter what the reason was, no matter how angry she was or how it came out or whatever. It was the fact that somebody else, aside from my immediate family, saw that I was acting out in a way I shouldn't be or that wasn't pleasant for everybody else, got me to wake up. And I am very thankful to her for that.
Wasn't pleasing to anybody else. Wasn't helping anybody else. Literally, what were you doing?
I was in my hotel room in that example, just shored up, drinking alcohol, drinking a bottle of vodka. We were in from out of town. We're visiting my wife's family in Chicago, where I was just dropping off my wife at her mom's house.
And they took the keys from you?
My wife did, yeah.
And then the sister-in-law approached you. Do you remember exactly what she said? Or was it just the way in which she said it and her position in the family, like you were explaining earlier?
It was the way in which she said it and her position in the family more than anything. And the only exact words I can remember her saying are, "We're sick of helping you."
Did you get help?
Yeah, I did, actually. I mean, it took a few more weeks, but I checked myself into Hazleton Betty Ford out in Chanhassen and joined their program. And then I transferred over into another program when it was apparent I needed a place that addressed psychiatric issues more directly. And then that's when I moved over to North Star Regional.
When we were off mic, you mentioned a manic episode in which you went to the hospital in an ambulance. What happened there?
I was acting out these fantasies that I talked about. The fantasy I was acting out at this time was artificial intelligence. Communicating with the TV, as crazy as that seems, when you feel like everything's connected anyway, it makes perfect sense. So I was setting up my cell phone in a way that it could be seen by the camera and the TV and the microphone. There's a sticker on my phone, Cool Planet, that I wanted everybody to see because I do care deeply about the environment. And I was counting 3, 2, 1, 0. The math behind that made sense to me somehow. Walking around in circles in my house, probably scaring the shit out of my wife and making my kids wonder what the hell is going on with his dad. It's pretty frightening to think that my behavior got to a point where my wife actually had to pin me down in the driveway by my ponytail and call the ambulance. And they took me away in handcuffs. That's when I was an inpatient for a week at the hospital, Fairview Southdale. I was thankfully released on New Year's Eve day. My wife and I went to the grocery store and we bought food for that evening, and we had probably the best New Year's Eve I've ever had, man. I was so thankful to get that help and to finally get back down to normal, man, to be grounded again. And I knew I'd be all right. My family was there, especially my wife. Thank God. I love her so much.
What a blessing it is. What a gift it is. What a synchronicity it is to have people around us that care for us in moments when we need it most, in moments when we are pushing them away with all of our might, yet they stay with us. Why? Why do they stay with us?
It's love, man.
That's what it is. It's love. Love brought you here. Love brought you to getting help. Love puts you across from the soundboard with me getting vulnerable. That's what love is. Love is connection.
Yes, I agree wholeheartedly. Oh, man.
Love is why you are here. And love gives you strength.
That's right.
Amen, man. Gives Chad strength. Chad strength, Chad smash.
That Hulk, man, that's funny. You even brought that up.
We mentioned how love gives us strength. So that's where we're going in this next portion. Thank you for sharing your experience. Thank you for getting vulnerable.
Thanks.
Thank you for being yourself.
Yeah.
That's truly what this world needs, is for you to be yourself.
That's why I'm here.
We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, Chad is going to talk about how
he got some Hulk strength! Thank you.
sitting here with Chad talking about anxiety, bipolar disorder, chemicals, lots of chemicals, people kicking him in the ass. Chad, let's talk about getting some help. You alluded to at the end of the last portion of the show that you were ready to go get some help. What happened? What was the catalyst moment that you were ready to go get some help?
So yeah, I got that kick in the ass from my sister-in-law. It got the gears turning in my head. There was a moment in particular that I can put my finger on where I was in my garage with two little bottles of vodka you get on the airplane, the little shot bottles. I just thought to myself, this is ridiculous. This can't go on. Poured those two bottles out the broken window in our garage, and I was so proud of myself. You know, I was like, wow, man, I just did it. I poured that vodka out. I got this. You know, I can handle this. I walked inside, and I had one of those synchronicitous events. My son was watching Steven Universe cartoon on the television, and the first thing I heard it said is, you can't do this alone. And that just struck me like a lightning bolt. You know, usually these synchronicitous events affirm what I'm thinking. They're usually right in line with what I'm doing. But in this moment, it didn't make any sense to me. That's why it stuck with me so much. I was thinking to myself, what do you mean? I can't do this alone. I just did. I just dumped those two bottles of vodka out of my window. I, of course, can do this alone. But man, I took it to heart. I knew I didn't make that up. I knew in my mind that it was real, and I decided it's time to get help. I can't do this alone, and that's when I checked into the Hazelden Betty Ford.
Before you checked yourself into Hazelden Betty Ford, did you ever get some help? Did anybody ever, yo, you need to go to treatment, or somebody check you into the hospital? Did you check yourself into the hospital? Anything like that happened before this, or was this the very first time you were actually getting help for your issues?
No, this was not the very first time I was ever getting help for my issues. I had, prior to that event, I had been in the hospital three times for three separate manic episodes that required myself to be in inpatient care. It's just that each of those three prior times, granted, it was a while ago, the help they offered was genuine, sincere, and it was there. It's just I didn't take on to it. I either had a problem admitting to myself that I was bipolar, or that I had a problem with chemicals, or that I even really needed to do any of the stuff that they mentioned, or they let me off the hook too quickly or too easily. A lot of us can look like we're normal, like we're doing well, and maybe not even need medication.
Those sound like things that didn't go well. The reasons why you didn't latch onto this. What about those situations, those hospital visits, those week-long inpatients for manic episodes, what about those was helpful? What did you take away from those?
For one thing, obviously, it helped me come back to ground, not be lost in this manic cloud, I guess. What I think that was long lasting is out of that confusion came more clarity. I believe that when we go through these anxious moments, when we go through these traumatic events, these things that throw us off kilter and force us to think, are those times when we do come to more clarity, come to more understanding, come to more peace. And it's not just thinking, it's feeling, it's being present, it's being with your higher power, your God, whatever you want to call it, your dog. When you connect back to what is and love.
Finding these connections, finding this moment of clarity, these moments of clarity in your hospital visits, a seed was planted, wouldn't you say? A seed was planted for future events, for this catalyst moment where you're dumping vodka out. What the hell's wrong with you? Alcohol abuse, sir. Sir.
Party foul.
Sir.
Yeah, I guess one of those times did bring me a step closer to the awareness I'm at now, and I'm not done yet, that's for sure. I'm continuing to learn and accept and all that good stuff and love better. I think each psychotic episode was a learning experience or a step towards something better.
Coming back to your most recent episode and your most recent entrance into a willingness to be in recovery, a willingness to address these things, because in my opinion, in my eyes, that's really what recovery is. When I talk about the basis of this show is all things recovery, meaning that if you are still living and breathing on this earth, you are in recovery from something. Whatever has happened, you're still living and breathing. So at some point, you've dealt with it in one way or another. Whether it is subjectively or objectively good or bad, it doesn't really matter. What matters is that you're still alive. You're still alive and you're sitting here. This strength, this help that you got, what did that look like your most recent time getting help? When you said enough is enough and checked yourself into Hazelden Betty Ford?
I went to the meetings. I was starting to receive help there. And I also got a tremendous amount of support from my wife, my kids, and my parents. Anybody who knew about it, really, they were all behind me, and thank God. And they did their best to understand. It's not an easy thing to do.
Outside of your family, though, being at Hazelden Betty Ford, what was helpful there? What did they give you?
I think it was a sense of community. Being around some other people who have had experiences, especially with chemical dependency, that really helped to hear other stories, to connect with other people on that level, and to understand just how serious this is. My current doctor now, he said repeatedly in the midst of this COVID crisis that chemical dependency kills way more people than COVID ever did or will. So it's a very serious issue. And just to be able to share my story and hear the other stories of other people, it helped tremendously. Like I said, I needed it to be more of a psychiatric angle than just chemical dependency. And that's why I moved on to North Star Regional.
What sort of tools did you receive at North Star Regional to address specifically your anxiety, your manic episodes, your bipolar disorder? Is that what you identify it as? Or do you identify yourself as a person that is bipolar?
I do now, yeah.
Okay.
And I'm learning to accept that. I still have somewhat of a struggle, just like any addict has a struggle with admitting that they're an addict or an alcoholic or anything like that.
You know? In anything, as long as there's a willingness there, as long as the door isn't completely shut on getting help, being open to assistance, there's always hope there. Just leave that door cracked just a little bit, because then help can flow in. And that sense of community, at least you have an idea that it could be possible. Keeping moving, you go to North Star. What did you learn there?
I've learned several things, coping mechanisms and...
Such as?
How to be vulnerable, honestly. How to gain confidence by accepting not only the good things about yourself, but the bad. Accepting everything about you and being okay with that. To the point where you can love yourself. To the point where you can share yourself like I am right now. To the point where you want to serve and give back so that other people don't have to struggle and suffer. Can see this as more of a gift. I don't know how many times I've thought to myself, and I've even heard other people say, gosh, man, why does it take something like alcoholism or drug addiction to get this help, to realize what we can learn from community, from each other, and to support and help and love? Honestly, the thing that helps the most with the program I'm in now at North Star Regional is my group therapy.
What do you guys do in that group therapy?
We spend 3 hours three days a week. We talk. We share, go through exercises.
What kind of exercises do you guys go through?
One of the first things we do is introduce ourselves and update everybody with anything that's going on currently that needs to be talked about. We watch motivational videos. We fill out worksheets, read materials, books.
What's on these worksheets? I'm interested.
Today, we talked about values and how that needs to be connected with our behavior. We all had our own top 10 list. Love was at the top of my list, but then toward the bottom of my list, and not because of any order, was responsibility, living life responsibly, which for me means service, also harmony with nature.
In partnership with the help you're getting, and even before you asked for help, were you ever on any sort of medication to help you with your bipolar disorder?
Sure, yeah. I started off with Risperdal and Wellbutrin. I'm currently taking...
And when was that? When did you start using psychiatric medication?
This was back in 95.
Since 95, have you been taking it consistently? For the most part?
Of one medication or another, yeah.
What is the one thing that makes those drugs not work? What's the one thing that makes those drugs not work?
Using alcohol and drugs, for sure, yeah.
Ding, 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 ding. What do we have for him, Johnny? If you are drinking, psych meds do not work.
Right.
That's a fact. If you are taking psychiatric medication, it does not work the way it is designed to if you are drinking. And it's also very dangerous.
My current doctor told me, you know, just one night of drinking would put my medications back 3 weeks. That blew my mind. I don't know why it took me so long to realize that. I mean, I always knew it's going to decrease the effectiveness of your medication. Yeah, so what? You know, I mean, the alcohol makes me feel good. The marijuana makes me feel good. Whatever, you know, I mean, that's working. So who cares? That's the deceitful lie that those substances get away with.
You now have this partnership not only taking medication and not drinking, abstinence from using substances. Congratulations, by the way. How far along are you?
Good question. I don't count the days. I don't know why not.
I'll do it for you. I'm really good at mental math.
Let's do this.
Okay. What was your last day using substances?
Right on. My sober date is December 23rd, 19.
December 23rd. Okay. 30 days past September, April, June, and November. So December 23rd?
Yeah.
8 plus 31 makes 39 plus 29 in February this year. Year makes 59, 68, 31, 99, March, April, 129, minus 129 minus 13 equals 116. I did it.
All right.
You're 106. You're 116 days clean and
awesome.
Sober today. Yeah. Congratulations. So
thank you.
I digress. Iceberg. Taking these medications and being clean and sober for 116 days. So huge. It's not just not drinking and taking medication. That's part of it. And in fact, sometimes that could be viewed as the easier part of working on your recovery, of working on yourself so you can further yourself in recovery, so you can enhance your recovery, nourish it. What are you doing to nourish that recovery outside of not drinking and using drugs and taking medication? What are you doing?
I'm digging into myself, my development spiritually, emotionally. We can go into more detail about that, but also my relationships for sure. Learning to listen, learning to love, keeping my own side of the street clean and not worrying about the other person's side of the street. That's their business. Just be me and be true to that. Keep it positive and loving. That's really, I think, as much as I know right now.
What role does spirituality play in your life right now? More importantly, what role does spirituality have in keeping you sober and on the right track to where you want to be, kind of what you're aiming for, your trajectory? What does that spirituality do for you?
Spirituality keeps me clean by knowing that when I do use alcohol or drugs, it's a disconnect from my higher power.
You say higher power. This spirituality thing, is that a religion or is that just a feeling you get?
I was brought up Christian, so my foundation is in Christianity. I still really love Jesus and all that good stuff. I just honestly have a hard time believing in religion. I believe in the spirituality behind that. I believe in Jesus. I believe in the Buddha, whatever, you know. I believe in all these things that bring us closer to love, honestly.
Is that what your spirituality ultimately gives you, is love?
Yeah, it's funny because with these manic episodes, I'm actually forced into that spirituality. And let me explain that. All these experiences that I've had, these sync-ups or whatever you want to call them, whether they're fake or real, especially the real ones, though, if I think of them or feel about them in a way that comes from anything but love, that leads to paranoia. That leads to terrible things. And so I have no choice but to believe that these experiences I can't explain. And I've studied physics all the way up to quantum mechanics, trust me, to try to understand these experiences and this phenomenon. If I believe that it comes from anything but a good place, I'm in trouble. And so I'm kind of locked in to my spirituality, which is, I believe in it being joy, peace, and love.
There's a faith aspect that I was feeling when you were describing your spirituality. What does your faith look like?
Faith is what we give back to the grace God gives us, right? Man, I've had my share dose of grace, that's for sure. All I can do is give faith back in return, and I'm very glad to do that. In fact, I like I said, I have to. If I don't give faith back, I end up in a horrible mess.
What are you continuing to do besides your work at North Star, the outpatient program? What are you doing besides that to nourish your recovery?
I meditate. I read spiritual books. I read other books too. I spend time with my family. I spend time with my neighbors and hopefully my friends too, and the community at large. Like I said, that group means a lot to me too, and the counselors and therapists and doctors over there at North Star Regional. And now, especially doing this podcast for KFAI.
Nice plug.
Thank you. Yeah, you're welcome. I'm doing this to, it's really my first step to be of service. And I think that's a critical role to give back. The 12 steps have also been amazing with my recovery. Reading the big book, it's a book based on the 12 steps. What I recently come to find out is what Dalai Lama called the best thing to ever come out of the United States. And I mean, I don't know everything that came out of the United States, but I can completely see his point. And I would say I agree, because what it is really a protocol for how you become self-aware. I like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You actualize yourself. It takes a great deal of work, a lot of reflection, a lot of actually paying attention, living life, and being clean to get there. And I'm not an expert, trust me. I'm only low on the steps. I can see where it's going. I can trust and I see what it leads to, whether it's enlightenment or some kind of spiritual awakening. I don't really know what it leads to. I'm not spiritually enlightened yet, but I would hope that maybe I could be, or a lot of us out there could be someday. And I think that the big book is a really good way to do it, because it's step by step. So are a lot of these other spiritual books. And certainly, I won't call it religion, but I'll call it the examples that religious figures have left for us. And I'm not saying religion is not a good thing. I have had many spiritual moments in church. I am Christian, but I think it's the example of Jesus. It's the example of Buddha. It's the example of a lot of these religious figures more than the institutionalization of it, even though that can be a good vehicle or mechanism by which to get us there.
I keep thinking in my head of the cartoon that your son was watching when you came in from the garage. The cartoon said, "You can't do this alone." What does that 12-step program, that book, provide you with? Are you reading the book alone?
No, I'm not reading it alone. I read it with a group. I read it with you, my sponsor.
What?
Thank God, Nick, yes.
God, yeah. I was like really, really pushing that one. I was like, when is he going to tell everybody that I'm his sponsor?
Yeah.
Chad, what's a sponsor?
A sponsor is a mentor, basically. Somebody who has been through the 12 steps, or at least read through it and understands them, whether they're spiritually enlightened or had spiritual moments or whatever. Not a requirement, possibly, but I've heard that it's best that your sponsor, your mentor, is sober for a year, that they take their sponsees through the steps, through the entirety of the big book, line by line, as fast as you can, but as thoroughly as you can. Thank God you're there with me, Nick, to help me with that. And I don't care how long it takes, man. I know we're getting through it, and we're doing it the right way. And I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Jen. Thank you.
Yeah, of course, man. Thank you.
What so many people don't know, I sponsor a fair amount of men. I mentor a fair amount of men. And what they don't know, and what I try and tell them from time to time, is that I'm getting more out of this than you are. Whether you know it or not, the hope that I get out of working with you, that I can still grow, that I can remain teachable, because I learn things from you every time we talk. And that's such a wonderful reminder that there is no end. Even in death, in my eyes, there is no end. For me, death is just a transition into something else.
I agree with that. No, I completely agree with that.
While I'm here, though, I want to continue to learn from people like you, because there is no end. And I am so grateful. So thank you for asking me to be your mentor.
I'm so glad I did.
I'm blessed. Truly blessed. We're going to take one more break. When we come back, Chad is going to discuss some hope. Please stick around. You'll like the rest of it.
Yeah. the burial ground. Just another pretty face. You may be the fate of a feeling, sleeping and perchance a dream. Honest to the point of recklessness.
To do like the NPR voice. Hold on. And welcome back to Authentic. We are talking here with Chad. Is that too breathy?
No, I think
can
it's,
you do it?
It's quite sexy.
Can you say welcome back to Authentic?
Welcome back to Authentic.
Wow! That was really good. Damn. That was some like Luther Vandross shit. Oh my goodness. All right, welcome back to Authentic. We are here talking with Chad about his recovery journey, dealing with bipolar disorder, chemical dependency, among other things. In life, it's never just one thing.
Oh, never.
It's never just one thing. Never. It's all these contributing factors that come from every angle, every experience we have contributes to where we are and how we approach life. Chad, at this point, it sounds like you're on the right trajectory. It sounds like you have a nice, solid foundation. How do you inspire hope? How do you help others? What kind of things are you doing to stay strong, to continue your current state of sobriety and your current state of recovery?
If I could borrow the name of this program, Authentic, I try to remain authentic. I'm glad you picked that title because it's so true. I think for every one of us, if we're just true to ourselves, we can find that passion inside, that purpose we're placed here to perform. It's been a while for me before I finally got back to that dream that I had, even before college, of becoming an entrepreneur. One way I'm trying to be authentic for myself and my family and for everyone really is to be a cricket farmer. I'm a proud co-owner and co-founder of Three Cricketeers along with my wife, Claire. The reason we're raising crickets and then processing them for people to eat is to keep us healthier and to be sustainable, to live in harmony with nature. Other ways I try to be authentic is to love. Like I said, I'm going to bring that up as often as I can, because that's really what it all comes down to. Passion for creativity, spirituality, all these things. And however I can express that and share that is why we're here.
There's this immense stigma that surrounds people with mental health issues, and we're starting to see this little ray of sunshine, even on commercials. Like Queen Latifah is talking to people about talking to your doctor about how you're feeling physically and mentally and emotionally. That just scratches the surface just a little bit. What do you do on a personal level to break that stigma of what it's really like to put a face to someone that has these insane, literally insane manic episodes? These wild stories of going to the hospital and thinking the CIA is trying to recruit you. What are you doing to normalize that? Because guess what? It is normal.
I challenge anyone out there to say to me that they don't know of anyone, whether it's a family member or a friend or even themselves, who hasn't struggled with chemical dependency or some kind of a mental disorder. This is in everybody's lives. I think that the stigma that exists, unfortunately, against people with these kinds of disorders is nothing but harmful, and it's preventing us from progressing forward and learning how to handle this. That's why I'm here on this program. For the longest time, I was a lawyer. I never dreamed I would be coming public with something like this because of how I thought that might affect my career or how people might look at me, how it might even affect my family. You know, I'm tired of hiding from it, and I'm ready to get rid of the fear, guilt, and shame that comes along with the social stigma against chemical dependency and any kind of mental disorder and any kind of recovery in general. I think we all need to, you know, I'm going to get on my little high horse here and give some advice. I think we all need to learn to love and be compassionate. We could never do with enough of that. There can never be too much of that.
What are you doing on a daily basis to break that stigma? Are you talking to people? Are you beyond this program? What are the realistic things that you are doing to let people know that they are not alone? Because whatever you say could impact somebody else's life in a way that normalizes it. It says, hey, this guy is talking about his bipolar disorder on a podcast and he's telling people his fucking name.
Yeah, right?
What are you doing beyond that? Like this grassroots movement that, all right, you ready for me to get on my high horse?
Yes, indeed.
The only way, and this is strictly my thoughts, my opinion. There's your disclaimer. The only way that we are going to truly break stigma and normalize this and help people before they have to turn to substances to combat their mental health disorders, to deal with them, to get comfort. The only way that we are going to stop that dead in its tracks before people start dying from chemical dependency is to address it, to normalize it, to talk about it every day. Talk about it at home with your kids. Talk about it in the schools. Talk about it in politics. Talk about it on the fucking weather.
Yeah. Completely, man.
Just talk about it, because once it sees the light of day, then that shame, that guilt is completely foiled. It dries out and crumbles.
I can't say it any better. That's awesome.
What are you doing to expose that guilt and shame, to expose that faux pas of having a mental health disorder? What are you doing?
You said it yourself. I mean, I talked to my kids about it. I just came clean. I said, hey, I'm an alcoholic. I'm an addict. This is what I've done. This is what I have done.
What about your mental health?
Same thing. They know I'm bipolar. They've witnessed some of the things that I've done when I acted out my fantasies. Unfortunately, it's not easy, but you know what? Life isn't easy. And these are the things that are happening. And we got to just be honest and let it out. Like you said, I liked how you put that when the light is shed on something, it can no longer hide. When that thing that is used to thriving on the fact that it can hide can no longer do that, it's gone. And that's what we're doing here.
It's exactly what we're doing on this show. I jokingly say to my mother, well, you know, it's just another day saving lives. It sounds silly. What I mean by that is not like some sort of self-righteous thing like, I am saving lives today, so worship me and pay attention to me. No. What I mean is by saying one thing to one person, I could save a life. I could impact someone who knows someone, or someone who knows someone that's going through the same stuff that I'm going through, and I'm willing to talk about it. And I can come to a place of recovery. So can you. Look at how messed up that guy Nick was. And he can call himself a spiritual warrior, somebody that's on a path of goodness, of loving kindness, of compassion, also of service. Service is my key. Service is my key that opens the door to happiness and unconditional love. Connection. That's how we save lives. Connection, which breeds love, which breeds life. Chad, how are you connecting with others to let them know that it's okay, that you are not alone?
I look at them in the face. And I talk to them. I love them as much as I can without being goofy. You know, I don't go around blabbing off about everything. I listen. If this topic comes up in conversation, I'm happy to talk about it. I've had other people tell me they know people who are bipolar, and it's a miracle when that happens. And I don't think it requires a miracle. We can talk about this. All of us can. But it doesn't have to be about that alone. It's really comes down to just connecting with people. I'd even go as far as to say it's about connecting to nature, and it's about connecting to our higher power And being there to listen, being there to talk to people, being there to let them know they're okay, and then knowing you're okay in return.
Chad, so many people literally die from these issues, from mental health issues, from chemical dependency issues, from alcoholism, from drug addiction. Why aren't you one of those people that has passed away because of their use or because of their mental health?
Man, again, I have to say I have had my fair dose of grace from my higher power, and I've returned it with faith. Service. Just the other day, I think my therapist was asking me if I'd had any thoughts of suicide or any tendencies of hurting myself, and I said no, because I didn't put myself on this planet in the first place. I'm definitely not going to take myself out.
Damn. I like that shit. Now comes the time in the program where I always ask this question, and I love asking this question, and I don't tell people that I'm going to ask this question. I used to, but not anymore, because I want it to be as authentic as possible. Chad, what do you want your legacy as a human being to be?
Wow. I think it's very simple. I want to share the light and spread love. I want my legacy to be, if anybody was going to think of me after I pass away or even after this interview, I would like them to think of me as somebody who is doing what they can to shed the light and share the love.
Chad, thank you so much for coming on and getting vulnerable today.
It was completely my pleasure, and I thank you so much, Nick.
Chad, I know in my heart of hearts that you have helped not only one person today, but countless people today. Anybody that has listened to our episode today has been helped. Just know that you have helped everyone around you by opening up, being vulnerable, and breaking stigma. And you really have embodied what this show is all about, to tell people that they are not alone and that there is hope.
Amen, brother. I love you, man.
I love you too. All right, that is all we have for today on Authentic. As always, we have to pay credit where credit is due so I don't get sued. The musical stylings you heard on today's program to open it up, Madness by Muse. Then we got into Chad's picks. First break, we had Harvest Moon by Poolside. Second break, we had Althea by Grateful Dead. And to send us off, More by Fish. Please remember, be good to yourselves. It is ever so important.
Life in slow motion, feet are in the clay. I'm going nowhere, been standing here all day. I had a notion there was something more to do. As I watched the water from the banks of the river, it swelled and grew. And I tilt to the left, lean to the right, tilt to the left and lean to the right. Walked on coal and slept on glass amid swords of sound and daggers of light. And my heart is screaming, 'cause half of what I say is lies, and it takes so much to keep up this disguise. It takes so much to keep up this